Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hi, I'm Ben Collins. Welcome to Some Say, my podcast series, which is all about fascinating car stories. Now, as some of you may know, for many years, I was the man in the white suit on Top Gear, and I was famous for not really saying very much at all. But in this series, I'll be interviewing some fascinating people from all over the world, from the worlds of cars and motorsport. So, guys, got a really interesting character. I just want to grab this guy whilst he's in the UK, which is a rare occasion. Misha, the king of the Nürburgring, the Meister, I think, is what you're known as on the internet.
Among the YouTubers, maybe. I like to keep it a bit...
I guess that's what you follow. That's where I've seen you.
Yes.
And, you know, your knowledge of that place is, I mean, it's pretty forensic, isn't it, at this stage? You've done so. How many laps have you done of the Nürburgring?
So I've been living there since 2015, and I do on average between 500 and 1,000 laps per year. So I say between 8 and 10,000 by now, probably.
Bloody hell.
Something like that.
All right, so can you just wind it back a bit? So that's where you are now, and you're famously, you will take anyone's car around, won't you?
If it's suited for the track.
So what about the tuk-tuk I showed you earlier?
Yeah, sure. We can do it.
You're happy with that?
Yeah. If we have a track to ourselves, then probably yes, yeah, under certain conditions.
All right, so you'll drive pretty much anything. But where does your racing journey begin? Because it's, I mean, basically the Nürburgring is known as being one of the hardest places to learn, let alone be a master of it and be able to drive any car and be confident with that. So how did you get started in a motorsport? Because it's fairly recent, isn't it?
Yeah, it's actually quite recent, and I think it would be an interesting topic for discussion because you either get born and put into a go-kart and then you become a race car driver, but in my case, it's not the case. I started driving on the years of 18. My first car I bought when I was actually 21 years old. It was a Subaru Impreza GC8. I bought it with some shot brakes, so immediately ordered a big brake kit for the car. And actually before that, the same day I bought it, I booked a race car driver license course for it. It was a 3-day course in Netherlands, in Assen, because I was living in Netherlands back then. Very nice track. So I had already upgraded brakes, suspension, seats, the dash as well. And my intention was to maybe one day compete in the Time Attack Championship. Did the course on the last lap of the free driving after I passed the course, blew up the gearbox. Also even had a small contact with the tire wall on the side where I was trying to drift.
Because of the gearbox or because of the drift?
No, because of me trying to drift the all-wheel drive car because I realized what the lift-off oversteer could do because it was a Subaru. So I was like, oh, well, let's see how I can use that. I'm a bit too much.
Yeah, so, it bit.
Yeah, it bit. But it was fun. You learn by doing, basically. But eventually, fast forward, I built that car to a Time Attack car. It had 705 horsepower, 864 newton meters of torque. It was a very fast. It was probably actually one of the most powerful Imprezas in the world back at the time. Competed in Time Attack, but it was mostly, okay, knowing how to drive straight and then kind of take the corners. Didn't know anything about the vehicle dynamics, the driving dynamics. It's just like, okay, all the gear, no idea. But the fun thing about knowing what I'm doing now, where I am right now, the Nürburgring. I was living and working and studying in the Netherlands back at the time. It was hour and a half away from the Nürburgring. And for many people, it's, like you said, like the Mecca of motorsports or like the Holy Grail. People need to go there once in their lifetime from other part of the world. And for me, it was like some old track in the woods. It didn't attract me. I couldn't care. I really didn't bother going there. And then fast forward to 2015, I got a job offer to go to a new established rental car company to help them out on the marketing things side. So I moved there because the offer was interesting. It was a brand new company. I knew I could do stuff that I wanted without anyone over my head telling me what not to do. And, well, long story short, I fell in love with the place. And now I live there, make videos on a daily basis, drive different cars, and also race cars. And that's where we are right now.
So it's an amazing, it's like a cultural mecca, like you say. It's a place to go. The Piston Klauser, the restaurant. Do you like, are you into your meat, cooking it yourself on a stone?
Yes.
Love all that. It's just got a real like a magnetic sort of force around it, the Nürburgring. So I mean, I grew up racing in the UK, so we have some amazing tracks here, and the two for me that stand out the most are Oulton Park and Cadwell Park. And there's real nuance to learning every little tiny detail of that place, because there's so much camber change. There's it's up and down Dale, and there's really quirky chicanes and things like this that are actually completely very different. Profile. Most of the, especially the newer stuff, they built into slow the straights down. But the banked corners and the really high speed stuff, I think, has got hints of Nürburgring about it. The difference being that there's maybe 10 corners on one of those normal tracks in the UK. How many curves is it?
They say the Nordschleife officially has 73.
Yeah.
But it's give and take what you find, a corner or a section or what in between.
Yeah.
So a lot.
So I've only driven, other than the Grand Prix track, I've only done the Nürburgring in a rental car, and it was a diesel. And, you know, it was me and my teammate when we were racing, and I did world sports cars. We had these, you know, really powerful 900 horsepower, like Formula One cars, basically, like the big sports cars. And so we were putting around in these two rental cars as fast as they would go. I don't think Avis minded. But still, it sowed the seed of you know, really my curiosity. And then actually, as I was reading more into history of the Nürburgring and when they would do the 1,000
kilometer
race, and Stirling Moss in particular, who just destroyed everybody at the Nürburgring. And it was partly down to his fitness and his determination, because he had this incredible focus. It really opened up a different world. And also I was reading the notes written by the Aston Martin team that were really responsible for him. And you got a sense of how much more he was able to extract from himself in the car at a track like that. So I think it is what maybe makes that place so special. But the learning process is the thing. So for me to go there and do it properly, what would you recommend is the way to go about learning the Nürburgring?
Well, there are multiple ways people can go about. There's a traditional way of moving there, doing many laps, doing track walks, because there are certain things that you see as a person on foot that you will not have the time or the perspective or the angle to see while you're driving at, 120 plus miles per hour through the track, just doing practice by learning. But actually what nowadays is very possible is do lots of sim racing. So I'm now fortunate enough to do some professional racing with BMW M4 GT4, and my teammates are Jimmy Broadbent and
him.
Super GT. Yeah, you know him.
Coming for you, Jimmy.
Yeah, because I think, did he beat you with MX-5?
No. No, he didn't. So we didn't race the MX-5, but he was my teammate at Praga, and he won the championship. So he did beat me that way.
So there's
that. It's not over yet.
That's good. Exactly. Stay hungry.
Yes.
But the thing is, he learned that track from digitally, and he is faster than I am in real life. So there are, of course, some other driver excuses involved in that, but it shows that you can actually, at a very cheap, or I'll say inexpensive way, you can sit in your living room, just as long as you're motivated.
And get on the sim.
Get on the sim, drive it, and also willing to learn, of course, because there's lots of time that people are doing mistake.
That's perfect. Well, actually, I'm helping develop a game called GT Revival, so that's hopefully coming out next year. And so I'll make sure we try and get the Nürburgring in there and
that'll be nice.
Get on the wheel. So, okay, that seems like an obvious one, because you can really learn the pace. I remember the original sim I learned on was a MicroProse GP2. Do you ever use that?
Yeah, I heard of it. Yeah.
It's pretty old and used to use keyboards, but it was accurate and you could learn the tracks. So for learning European circuits, I use that quite a lot. The thing is, the Nürburgring is, it's so long. I remember hearing that one thing also you can do. So I think you're right. Walking it, talking it, simming it is, I heard some people break it into three sections. And you break it down and you try and learn it one third at a time. The BMW school, I think, does this.
Multiple schools do that. The oldest establishing school, Scuderia Hanseat, has been doing it since 1953, I think, or so, or 54. And they break it up into even more sections, like 5, 6, or 7 sections. And they do it based on the whichever section they find relevant that particular year, because every year the track is changing in maybe small bits or bigger bits, because they resurface it, they change the tarmac, the grip levels, they take away the bumps, new bumps come because the seams of the tarmac, new curbs, different curbs. It's always an evolving track. That's why it keeps it so interesting.
Plus, for you drive everything. So yes. This reminds me of my old Top Gear job, because it could be, you know, a Ford Fiesta and then it could be a Veyron. So what's the slowest and the fastest cars you've taken around the ring?
Pooh, good question. Well, the fastest must be like either the purely bred race cars, like either the GT4, or I've driven a cup car, like a street legal car, or some Black Series modified to 860 horsepower, the AMG GT Black Series. So they are definitely fast, and even too fast for the public sessions where I drove them, because like with the Black Series, within one lap, we had, I think, 60 or 80 overtakes, you know? So you're just like, it's like...
In one lap?
Yes, in one lap.
So how, this is the thing, I've watched a lot of this on YouTube, and it's really, it's entertaining. I shouldn't be entertained by it, because it's probably going to bite me in the backside, but it looks like carnage. There's, everything is out at the same time.
Yes.
And you've got quite slow vehicles trundling around. Mm-hmm. People like me, maybe, who are learning the track, and you've got people going past it doing full send in a, something like an AMG.
Yeah, or even a small shitbox.
How does that work out?
It does work out, surprisingly, you know, because... the majority of incidents that happen, an incident could be a breakdown, could be someone losing it and crashing it, they actually do not really involve other cars, multiple cars. The only multiple car incident that happens there is when more cars collide over a spill of oil or something. But other than that, people don't really crash into each other. Because, and that's the funny thing, because I used to, for the last 10 years, I used to deal a lot with rental cars. So dealing with people who come for the first time, or with their own cars. And the biggest fear that people have, it's them being in the way for faster guys.
Okay, so they're aware of it.
They're aware of it.
Which is a German mentality, isn't it, from the Autobahn? People expect you to move.
Exactly.
So there's respect.
Of course, in that way, you have lots of tourists coming there, like, but people from all over the world, also people who actually live there. But not
Which is a problem, because the Brits, they don't move. They stay in the middle lane, they're lane hogs. So there's a clash of cultures here.
I know worse cultures.
Okay, all right.
So it's not a big thing. But the thing is, people are so afraid of faster traffic behind them.
Yeah.
But the fast traffic is a lot more afraid of the slow traffic, inexperienced traffic, what's happening ahead of them. Because what if they pass them at 100 plus miles per hour difference, or 200 kilometers per hour difference, and he doesn't move, or he doesn't see, and he moves suddenly to the left because whatever.
You're toast.
But vice versa, the guy is afraid of being in the way that the fast guy might crash into him. And I always tell to the beginners, like, don't worry. The guy with a 500,000 euro car wants to crash into you much less than you want him to crash into you. So as long as everyone keeps their mind and, like, eyes on the road and communicates by using indicators, it works out nicely. So expect the unexpected, be prepared for anything, and everything will work out.
I think there's a reason that that track is in Germany, and there's a lot more order that goes on there than some of the track days I've been on, but that's interesting, because there's a ton of blind crests there. And someone else I know who's raced at the Nürburgring a lot of times said that despite this, I think maybe in the night, maybe he was a bit tired, you know, your brain starts to play tricks on you. And he said he mistook one of the S's for a different one.
Mm.
And has that ever happened to you, where you're because it's such a long lap, you don't get that rhythm of crossing the line regularly. It's, you know, if you just have a moment elapsed, has that come across to you?
No, I didn't mistake in a corner. The only, like, really fail I had once that I remember is I was just way too tired. I shouldn't have not been in the car, and I just didn't brake at all for a corner. I went for an overtake, and then I realized I should have stayed behind and not on overtake, and I went straight into the wall. But I was just like, it was a year of my life where I was saying, yes, 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 let's do this, show here, show there, the multiple videos. And I was just like, I zoned out, and I was in the concrete wall.
Yes. It's funny, actually, the sports car, which was the fastest thing I raced, 220 miles an hour at Le Mans. But I was in that season, I was doing so much, and I was racing, I was doing Formula 3 occasionally as well, and I reached for the gear stick when it on the wrong side.
Ah.
So I just for a moment was in the wrong car, my head. But I fortunately had it gathered up before the braking zone, but that's a tough way to learn a lesson.
Yeah, mental fitness is important in car.
So was that your only crash at the Nürburgring, the outbreaking moment?
Oh no, absolutely not. On average, I have about one a year.
So. Okay. In someone else's car? Well, I guess it always is, because, you know, that's your
own. Yes and no. I mean, in someone else's, like the YouTube stuff, I had two so far.
Okay.
So one with where the brakes absolutely went away. So okay, we scratched.
Car fail.
Yeah. And one 50% car fail, the deflation of the tire. So it kind of spun on its own axle. So it was, I would say, 50-50.
Okay.
So also kind of my mistake. And then there is, of course, race cars, which are also someone else's cars. My private car once, and then I think a rental car two times.
So Jackie Stewart, green hell for a reason, because if you go off, it's a big accident.
Yeah, absolutely. But I also say at the same time, the Nürburgring is the most safe place in the world to have an accident, because you have all these barriers. I mean, if you're going to go off, you're going to hit the barrier, but the barrier is there to protect you from a 20-meter fall off a cliff,
right?
For example, or
but
into a
close,
tree.
But they're close, aren't they?
They're close, but again, they're close there for a reason, because they it's built on a hill. Mm. Again, if you go, when you come over, I'm going to take you for a track walk, so you can go over the barrier and see, like, aha, I'm going to fall down 25 meters down and or against the tree if those barriers are not there. And the track was built in 1927, so it's not that they could, like, make it wider or can redo it now. We should be happy that it exists in its current form nowadays. So, but as mentioned, for me, it's the safest place to have an accident, because I know that within a certain minutes there is going to be emergency personnel with me. Especially now, Nürburgring has invested, I think, 11 million euros into digitalization project. So we have AI cameras that will detect people on track, debris on track, oil on track, car standing still, which will immediately show yellow LED lights, send personnel. So it's going to get even safer than that. So when it comes to that, I think it's a very safe place to crash. There's only one concrete wall. I hit it at, the speedometer stopped when I hit it. It was, I think, 130 kilometers per hour.
To zero.
And I got out fine, was no problem whatsoever, because it was during racing. I had full hands, so everything was okay. And the smallest minor accidents that I had, for example, even as a passenger while instructing, when the driver decided, like, oh, I'm going to lift. Never lift, and then you have an incident. Those small injuries I would have were already significantly worse than a full impact where I just walked out and didn't have to even have a check in a hospital, because the doctors who saw me, like, no, you're fine, you can go.
So is it one that you thought was particularly gnarly or does make you a bit more fearful?
You know, I mean, you see things go wrong. I mean, you saw... Last year, we lost two lives of industry pool drivers, people who were there in a professional environment, who were going close to 300 kilometers per hour, 180 miles per hour on the main straight. They turned in, they hit something on the track. It caused a tire, like, flat out deflation or a complete explosion. And they hit the barrier and the car started rotating. Yeah. Because my balcony is about, like, 200 meters from the track. So I always hear cars going past. And sometimes I hear boing, boing, boing. And then I count the things. I grab my dogs. I go for a walk, see what happened, if I need to see what happened or I need to walk the dogs. In this case, the hit was different. You heard a hit, then it was silent for about 5 seconds. And then it didn't hit the barrier, but hit the tarmac. Because later, as we found out, the car started spinning in the air. Because of the G-forces at such high speeds, both the drivers, well, the driver and the passenger, were ripped out of their seatbelts and launched outside the car. Should have been a fully safe exercise environment, professional drivers on the prepared track, on a prepared vehicle for these kinds of things. Both people died. So it can always go wrong in the most unexpected way. And it always goes wrong when you expect it the least. Because accidents that I had, like... From a driver perspective, not when brakes failed or something, because that's, of course, also, if you know that the brake is going to fail, you're not going to get into a car. But also from driver perspective, when I was, like, 100% attributed to me as a driver because I did something that I shouldn't have done, it was because, like, that corner is so easy. I've done it 100 times. I know already. I'm going to focus on the next one. No, keep your mind always at that particular corner, because that's... If you lose your attention for a split second because you're overconfident or whatever, that's when it's going to go wrong. And that's the thing. It's when you're out there, we can get out now. We can, like, I have a friend who died because he had a moose on his motorcycle, you know? Things can go wrong on a public road.
Yeah.
And there are more accidents on a public road, especially lethal ones, than on the track. Because I think the track is the safest environment to go fast. And responsible.
But you've still convinced me not to take the tuk-tuk. I'm not sure the brakes won't fail.
Here?
I'll get something. No, I'm not taking it to the Nürburgring. I'll bring
Why
some
Why not?
Resistance.
There is a record for a tuk-tuk on the Nürburgring.
Is there really?
We need to beat it. It's 34 minutes.
Okay, all right. That's,
you can
that's
do
beatable.
It. You can do it. You don't have to go crazy.
I'll bring a bunch of toys. All right.
Can I be on the back seat?
Yeah, I wouldn't, but you can. Cool. So, what's the? You mentioned you can go and hire a car, which sounds strange, and then drive around the ring.
Yeah.
So, but what's the legalities of insuring that car?
So, if we talk from the fully, like, the question related to the rental cars, all the cars are insured, but all of the rental car companies have a excess or deductible policy, which means that the person driving it is responsible for roughly 50% of the value of the car. So, for example, if you're driving a Mark, whatever, 7 or 8 Golf, which is roughly 40,000 euros, maybe nowadays 50.
What kind of rental car? Which one? Normal, like an Avis or a Hertz?
Ooh, no, don't
okay,
do that.
No, it's a Nürburgring special.
Yes. So, okay. And that's also a very interesting topic we should cover because, again, to finish one topic, you have the Nürburgring rental car companies like that have track-prepped cars.
Okay.
Proper brakes, proper tires, everyday inspected. At least I hope the proper companies do that. Then you know you're safe at least when it comes to the equipment. It's fully prepped and it's all good. If you sign off that you are responsible for X amount of euros, it values between, it goes as cheap or as affordable as 4,000 to 5,000 euro up to for an accident. So if you damage the bumper, you pay for the bumper. Mm-hmm. Like if you write it off completely and the car is worth tens of thousands of euros, you're only responsible for four or five, depends on what the number is. Up to, in the GT3 RS, the 992, I've seen, I think the insurance access on that is, I think, like 150 grand.
So if you poke that and destroy it, you owe them 150.
Yeah, 150, yes. Now, here comes the fun bit. Of course, this is a lot of money. It's also made to make sure that people kind of don't go out there as a kamikaze driver because they think, I'm insured, I don't care. I will just go out there and do it. Because people have that mindset regardless when they come with their own car. And that's a big problem because they think nothing's going to happen. I paid for my insurance. But your insurance has a small stipulation in the contract saying you're not allowed to take it out on a Nürburgring, on a racetrack. Or it might say you're not allowed to take it on a one-way toll road in Germany, and there's only one, that's the Nürburgring. You need to read through the small letters.
Sorry, so Nürburgring is a toll, is a road?
It's
toll road?
On a public session day,
yeah.
So which is called Touristenfahrten, it's classified as a public toll road. You come and buy a lap ticket, which is essentially just toll that you pay, and you do your lap. And you're not allowed to do lap timing. You're not allowed to do any competitive stuff. There's also a speed limit applying. Mm-hmm. If you have an accident, the same rules or legalities apply as on a public road. So this means that police will be involved. Police will come, investigate the accident, they will make a report, and they will probably maybe even give you a fine for dangerous driving behavior if it was obvious that you caused it. And that report will go to your insurance, for example. And your insurance might say, like, oh, you drove on a racetrack, we're going to cancel your policy completely. Or if you made an accident and someone's property was damaged, like the Nürburgring's property, so it could be just the barrier or a tree. Well, that would be a barrier. If you hit a tree on a Nürburgring, you already did something very extreme. But for that barrier, you need to pay.
You pay to fix the Armco.
You pay to fix the Armco, yes. Again, the same way it happens on a public road.
How much is an Armco?
Nowadays, I would say an average bill is starting from 2,000 euros, roughly.
Per section?
No, not per section. I can grab one of my bills later and show it.
Yeah,
I got some bills, yeah, for sure. No, but like on average impact, when you like bend, I don't know, like 60 meters with three layers, then it goes towards, I think the highest bill I've seen was around 10,000 euros because the car went pinballing and hit a couple of sections at the same time. But the important thing regarding legalities and obligations is that people on those days are responsible to what happens to the track and to the others, like they are responsible on a public road. So if you damage the barrier, you need to pay for the barrier. Or if your car is insured on German plates, because some of the German insurers still cover the Nürburgring on a public session. On a track day, they say no, unless the track day stipulates and they say, like, we do not allow lap timing. It's more of a driver safety improvement. There are lots of legalities between it. But people need to understand when they go out with their own car is that they're responsible for what happens to the track and to others. Mm. I know that every UK insurer has blocked the Nürburgring from a famous mythical case when the E39 M5 dropped an oil pan and a Carrera GT and a Ferrari 360 went around it, and it was like all over the Daily Mail news when a 10 million euro insurance bill went to that car. So all the insurers blocked out the Nürburgring forever. But this means that if you go out on a public day and you have a not well-maintained car, and you're going to drop an oil pan or maybe even leak a bit of oil, and a biker comes around it and kills himself, you're going to be liable for it because your insurance is going to say, like, well, you neglected our rules. You went out on a racetrack where we clearly said not to. Then, according to the European court, according to European regulation, I don't know how it works now with Brexit, but a few years ago, your insurer would have to pay. They would cover the bill, but then they would go after you and sue you. So that's how it went to go. There's lots of legality. So what I'm getting at, if you have a car, you're going to drive it on a track day, no problem. You're going to do racing, no problem. If you're going to drive on public sessions, think at least 5 times if it makes sense to maybe not to rent a car that is insured and you're only liable for a few thousand euros, because that might be worth in the long run. So those are like lots of things that people do not think about.
Or bring some Armco with you. Yeah, then you can just fix what you break.
Yeah, but actually also when you break it, you can take it with you.
Yeah.
And put it on your wall.
Get it signed by Misha.
If I'm the one that's crashing it into, sure, right. Whatever floats your boat.
I'm renting the car. I'm bringing my own Armco. I'm bringing my helmet.
Okay. That's good.
Check.
Sounds good.
Checklist.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, sorted. Good. These are important notes for everyone that does, because there's loads of us that do go across to the Nürburgring.
And they go, and again, I'm also the one who hops in also all the British cars. The majority of the cars I'm driving are actually UK cars. And call me stupid or reckless or just someone who wants to have fun in life. I don't know, whichever it is, I'm doing it. But it can go really wrong.
You inspect them a little bit.
No, for sure. No, of course. Of course. I look under the bonnet. I see if there are like any noticeable leaks or any maintenance. Of course, I look at the pads and tires and everything and make sure.
And
if something feels off, I'm like, okay, now I'm backing off. Completely. Like, okay, we're done. Sorry. So there are lots of laps out there on the video that have not been published for various reasons.
Brave man.
Yeah. No.
So when you were studying, did you get the benefit of going to one of these racing schools at the ring, or did you start reading information? How did you try and catch up? So how did you learn your craft quickly without the benefit of a racing career in go-karting?
Good question. Well, actually, you're realizing that I need to do something about it and not to suck. So how do you do it? Sim racing, reading. I have something actually here that I would like you to sign.
Okay,
I recognize mind.
That.
Yes, reading, understanding the vehicle dynamics, the basics, because the basics is the most important thing. If you don't have the basics right, you're not going to be fast, because professional drivers, whether it's like Formula One drivers, they're doing the same, they know exactly the same, they're just able to process the information faster and do things faster in a certain way than we are able to do, because there's of course also lots of preparation involved. So understand the basics, get them right, and then it should be good. Because even now, when I drive all these cars, again, going back to the fact that Jimmy has a better advantage over me as a driver, because he's a focused race car driver. I drive all kinds of 100 different cars in a year.
You have more seat time in race cars.
Exactly. I drive 100 different, 500 cars a year, maybe sometimes, different cars. And I need to be prepared, okay, what if the tire blows out? What if the brakes fail? What if they fade? How does this react on this particular tire in these conditions and this and this? So there's always like a middle ground.
Big variable.
Exactly. And then I go into a proper race car, we do data analysis, and the first thing, like my teammate or a pro driver or instructor says, Misha, you forget how to brake, because then all of a sudden you need to stamp on it 120 plus bar of pressure. You need to trail brake. Don't be afraid. Yeah. Something that you can do and you cannot do with a street car, and just be confident and go for it. And I totally lost my thought there. where we're going?
Well, it's interesting. It's about how you learn and what you learn and how that experience plays out and comparable. I think with the street car, you have to the brakes won't stop you, and you know also if you're on the ABS, you're gonna miss the corner, and
if you
miss it once, you can be in the gravel.
Exactly.
So race cars, you can be very brutal with the brakes.
Yes.
So it's interesting. Yeah, actually, you were gonna say before, you told me the fastest car you've driven, and what's the slowest you've driven around there?
The slowest. It must be like some Daihatsu Quarter or something. Something, or maybe even slower. Maybe a Lada. I did drive a Lada.
Yeah.
Like a Lada from 1973.
Rear-wheel drive.
Yeah, yeah.
So awesome.
Proper and like independent suspension because it just does... Lives its own life. It's not because it's battling.
So the straight's going to take a long time.
Exactly. Yeah, they're quite slow.
But I saw a photo of you in the Lucid. So it's a car I know really well. I got the fastest run up the hill at Goodwood with it once, and it's a fantastic dynamic machine. So how did you find electric power at the ring?
You know, I love it. Actually, I do enjoy it. I don't have anything against it because. A lot of people, or not a lot of people, people sometimes like to generalize. When I like do some electric car, people say like, we want internal combustion, we want this. But there will always be something that people like or dislike. I consider myself a car guy. So I don't care about the propulsion. I'm there for the overall experience. So if the electric power can accelerate me from A to back to A in a fast way, I don't care.
Yeah.
And actually, that's not a problem. So. At this point in time, we are now slowly starting to progress where the battery technology is actually getting viable to do a full lap. And in case in Lucid, you can do a full lap without a drop of the battery performance. Now it starts getting interesting. So in that way, it's not a big issue.
I think especially for the Nürburgring, because that Lucid, you can manipulate the weight. So you can really dive it into the cambered corners, and
yes.
Which is essential for the ring. If you wash out, if the car is numb and you lose the front, you lose so much speed, I think.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to drive the Sapphire because I have just the Midnight Air edition, Midnight Dream edition, and the Sapphire should be like really purposeful.
It's a rocket ship.
Yes.
You're going to enjoy that. It's interesting.
Yeah.
So the fastest race car is the GT?
GT4, yeah.
So when you watch that lap by Dumas... in the hypercar or the LMP1. You see that?
You mean the 919?
Yeah.
Timo Bernhardt. Because Dumas did...
Bernhardt's gone faster, has he?
No, Bernhardt done the Nürburgring Nordschleife.
Yeah.
Then...
Dumas did one.
Yeah, no, he was his teammate, but he didn't drive the Nordschleife.
Okay.
Dumas did the Volkswagen IDR, I think. That's
that why. One?
Yes. Yeah.
It looks fast forward.
Yes.
Insane. That lap is insane.
Yeah.
Is that something you would want to do?
Like to do a lap record?
Yeah.
Probably. Maybe.
So with all these different cars, different speeds, the track completely changes. I mean, there are curves that are nothing in a Lada, but in a hypercar, it's going to be a serious corner, maybe even a downshift or a brake.
Yes.
So how do you... I mean... Do you, when you get in it, does your brain automatically set to the different, it's like a video game with PlayStation, you know, you can, because you've gone through so many different models. Do you do it automatically or do you have to think about it?
I mean, it depends. I mean, you get adjusted to a certain car in a certain way. I mean, it takes me like, I don't know, well, less than an average person to adjust to a certain car because I know like, okay, there we definitely do not have to lift because of the certain characteristics of the car, whether it's the tire, the overall grip level or the aerodynamic forces. But then come really the small things, like, you know, as a race car driver, it's about like, okay, do I brake here 10 centimeters later and trail brake in there, or will I be on the grass or on the curb or where I will be? And that's the adjustment that gets you, well, the race is one that you want to win, of course. So, the overall, of course, you understand that the car is much more capable than a base model car, than a street car. So you start doing things. And again, also sim, for that matter, is a safe way to find out what the car vaguely can do, like roughly can do.
But then at the same time, because most of the time, I'm right, the owner of the car goes with you.
Yes.
Which is a little bit like sleeping with his wife in front of him.
That's what a lot of people actually comment on my videos, yes.
I mean, how does that work out? I mean, do you get some people that scream at you to slow down? They change their mind halfway through. It's kind of like a base jump, isn't it? Once you've committed.
No, I mean... Yes and no. I mean, actually...
Do you feel the pressure, though, that person's there?
I wouldn't say I feel the pressure. Definitely not.
Because they're usually happy.
They're usually happy because people reach out to me. I never reach out to them. Like, at no single point have I ever asked, like, hey, can I drive your car? They always ask me, and I always ask them, like, how do you want me to drive it? Can I take curbs? Can I go in the carousel? Can I floor it? Is there any certain like heat limitation or oil temperature level?
Everything. So you have empathy, which is what makes
absolutely,
it work.
Absolutely. And I asked them that beforehand, and they at any given point they can say like, okay, slow down, or can we please not do that
How
again?
How often does that happen?
Never.
Really, never.
Never. It has never happened.
That's not happened with me. So I had this. I used to do passenger rides at Silverstone in a Formula One car with two seats, so you can't see the guy behind.
Yes.
But they had a panic button. They would hold onto like a sort of dummy wheel that was fixed off, and they had to hold a button down. And if they let go of the button, a red light would come on.
Yeah.
And quite a few times the button came on, so I would have to stop. Well, I was trying to do the same and be empathetic and like, how fast do you want to go? But
I have to correct myself. It has never happened on my YouTube laps. I've done the ring taxi service where there people are actually booking. They have no idea where they're getting into. And they're like, oh, yeah, I can do it. And then already by the first corner, they're like, please slow down, stop. Or otherwise, I'm going to puke.
Right.
Whereas in my case, they're like, no, I'm going to through the end. I know what I signed up for. I know I've seen these videos. And actually, I would say in 99.9%, people ask me, tell me, send it. I don't care if it breaks. I just want to see what my car can do. And I want to have fun because you live only once. I'm like, okay. And that 0.1%, people say, can you take it easy? And I respect that. We do that. And then people complain like, oh, yeah, there was such a slow lap. No, I was just respectful. And when you drive too fast, people complain like, oh, you have no respect for other people's material.
Yeah.
That's what the person asked me to do.
That's interesting. So beyond the Nürburgring, where else have you picked up any favorite tracks or things that that really scream to you that or somewhere you aspire to go? Having learned the hardest one, it must be tempting to go out and...
Yeah, everything else, the problem is everything else becomes boring in a way. Like, it's just like even because...
You haven't been to Macau.
Okay. Good point. That I mean, I love Spa.
Yep, Spa is awesome.
I love, I was in Portimao recently. Also fantastic track. I've driven Ascari, also very good.
Yep.
I want to do actually a couple of UK tracks for sure. You mentioned Oldham Park. I got an invite to go there for some endurance series actually in June 6th or something. So I might do that. So definitely, I want to go out and have fun. Absolutely. But every time I'm like driving any other track, it's like, oh, it's too short. Oh, I'm missing this. The excitement of having like, you know, your foot down for actually 2 kilometers straight and jumping sideways through the air while fighting the traffic around you. That's completely, you don't get that anywhere else.
You've kind of got me hooked. So if I go out there, would you show me around?
Absolutely.
Help me, teach me. I'll start learning on the sim. I'll watch a load of video. I'll get training and start paying attention more. But
good.
I would love to do a lap with you and show you how
to. I would love to, yeah.
Okay. Awesome, well, thank you. In the meantime, I'm going to show you Blyton Park. It's got 5 corners. You can handle it.
Nice. Well, it's about technicalities. So I'm sure I can learn a lot.
It's not as nuanced as the Nürburgring, but, you know.
But again, going back to the basics, if I get those right, because maybe I will get a couple of seconds back at the ring.
Amazing.
Because I'm focusing only on the fast stuff there. So now I'll be able to process the slower stuff, which is also very important.
Well, look, thank you.
Thank you.
Tune into Misha's channel, which is...
just my name, Misha Sharudin.
We can find that for some more crazy stuff with him. And thank you for your time today. And we're going to go rip it on the track now.
Amazing.
See what we can do.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.